Hey, Michael Steele podcast listeners, Michael Steele here with another quick take from the Michael Steele podcast. Check out what's going on right now.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Michael Steele podcast. I don't know about you, but I'm riveted. Dr. Joy has gotten my attention with her great book, Unmasking AI, My Mission to Protect What is Human in a World of Machines. It is an incredibly intelligent and thought-provoking and a little bit scary glimpse of not just the past and her journey, but the future and what you know our use of this technology can look like. And we're having that conversation with Dr. Joy Bolawami. I told you I was gonna mess it up.
Oh, no worries. Bolawami.
There you go. I'm all over the map. And so
Dr. Joy is just fine.
Dr. Joy. So here we go. So Dr. Joy, you know, that we've talked about the application of AI and the use of the development of this technology, not just this technology, but a whole host of technologies in this space around, bias and the algorithms that are used to infuse bias into our social structure via technology. Have you seen or know of any examples where artificial intelligence is being used in voting or in politics or anything in that political space? Because one of the things that I took note of was the Republican National Committee over the summer had introduced its first AI, the first AI political commercial. Wholly manufactured in the bowels of the RNC, showing images that were created to convey an impression or an idea that was not actually accurate. And they had once people were like, wait a minute, you just showed something that Joe Biden wasn't there or didn't say. And so they had to admit, oh yeah, that was artificially created. So they didn't label it what it was up front. They put it out as a more traditional campaign commercial. My fear is we're going to get that in spades over the next year. What do you see and what have you seen in the political and voting space when it comes to artificial intelligence?
I'm so glad we're having this conversation ahead of an election year, because the risk of AI, and in particular generative AI, when it comes to elections, are real. They're present. And I don't think people completely grasp the generative AI capabilities that are present now. So something that happened in the AI world, right, that's been ongoing, is this notion of open source. So open source means that really powerful technology that maybe only a really big tech company could produce, like Microsoft, because it would take tens of millions or hundreds of millions of dollars to develop, are now available to just about anybody, right, with an internet connection. And the capabilities that we're seeing with generative AI systems is that they don't have to be completely perfect. So for example, earlier this year, there was a fake image, right, of an explosion at the
Pentagon. Yes. Yeah. Yes. I was going to bring that up, but go ahead. Yeah.
Right. And so with this one, someone who has a better understanding of the Pentagon can say, wait a second, that part looks wrong and this part isn't quite right, etc. But really, that didn't matter. It was just creating enough havoc and also enough confusion, right, to then make a problem. And so now that you have more of these AI tools in basically the hands of amateurs, we're going to see the basically infestation and flooding of our information ecosystems. So I really do think it's incumbent on the social media platforms to actually be held accountable and to face penalties for using AI systems or allowing the flooding of AI systems.
How do you think that's going to work? We can't even get Elon Musk to recognize that his application of free speech on the platform formerly known as Twitter, he has invited hate speech, racism to flourish on that platform. Now you've got that, you layer on top of that an AI component. Where the idea of regulating that or expecting Elon Musk to actually do the civically correct thing and to push back and not allow those types of things on his platform when he freely allows the N-word to have free reign on his platform with no penalties. I don't know how we think this gets better with AI.
I don't think it gets better without financial pressure. And so we've seen when advertisers start to go off the platform, right? Then right. Changes happen. Then visits to particular sites or particular countries happen as well. Not just Twitter, though, that I'm looking at. I'm also thinking about Facebook and Meta more generally, sure. And Instagram. For example, they do have control on the type of ads that can be released. And they do have the ability to say that AI-generated ads are either labeled or not allowed to propagate. Mm-hmm. These are design-level decisions that, with the appropriate pressure, could actually be changed. So I'm not so convinced that there is absolutely nothing that can be done. I remember when Facebook, and granted this was after a $650 million settlement, deleted 1 billion face prints that it had collected of people over time. And part of this was because of law. There was the Biometric Information Privacy Act of Illinois that said you actually had to get people's consent. So if we don't have any guardrails in place, then the companies can act with impunity, basically. So this is why I think it is important to actually have guardrails, even though, to your point, I absolutely agree that the incentives are pretty low at the moment because there's really not much in the way of pushback.
So let's expand this out a little bit, because your book, again, you know, talks us through a number of important chapters around the various spaces that are impacted by AI, and how we kind of, you know, how various organizations, the CIA and Department of Defense and all these other agencies that are out here kind of, you know, some would say, you know, being the puppet string holders in some of this, and others would say we'll use that to other means. But a little bit closer to home, you've got the AI impact on education, so college admissions and TBG is sort of, you know, a big concern now, for people who are writing essays for college admission tests. And so you've got two different types of workforces or spaces where, AI can play a role and will play a role. How do we manage, AI specifically as a resource, you know, with a resource like ChatGPT and college admissions and school work being done honestly on one end, but then outside of that environment, how people use this technology to the point where they put themselves out of work. And it is easier for me as a manager or an employer to have the machine look at a thing, make determinations about a thing, push something through a process, than it is to have an actual human being.
Yeah. So to address both of your points, I've been thinking of this notion of the apprentice gap. So before you reach mastery, before you become an expert, you gotta crawl before you fall, right?
Right.
There's some notion of there's work you put in to gain a certain level of mastery. And recently I actually started, this will connect, so stay with me. I started playing guitar.
Okay.
Again, after a bit of a pause. There's a Rolling Stone feature that I did with other amazing women in tech. We'd been warning about AI system issues for a while. We did this whole Rolling Stone feature. I had this yellow dress. It inspired me to buy a yellow Les Paul Appetite Burst / guitar. I'm playing my little electric guitar and I'm realizing, oh, my calluses are still here, right? So I was expecting it to hurt, but it didn't because of the prior years put into playing guitar.
Right.
So it started making me think of this notion of professional calluses. So now let's bring in an AI system or AI systems. And as a student, I don't ever really write my essays. Right? I'm always using AI in some kind of way. What happens when I'm actually challenged to build those synthesis skills and critical thinking skills that I never fully developed?
Right.
And so when that aid or that crutch actually prevents you from exercising important muscles versus being an assistant, right? When, okay, you already know how to put together an essay. Now you're trying to refine ideas. So I think we have to be really careful, right? That we don't stop using certain types of intellectual functions for our own personal development. So now when I think of the professional world, I think of this nonprofit that was so caught up in the hype of AI capabilities. They're named NEDA, National Eating Disorder Association.
Mm-hmm.
So some of their workers unionized for the reasons people unionize, better pay, all that good jazz. And they said, we're not dealing with this. We're going to replace you with AI. And so they work call centers. So now they replace this call center kind of thing with chatting with the ChatGPT. And what happened was the system was actually giving people with eating disorders information that's known to make eating disorders worse. And they had to shut down that system. I don't think it was even a week, right? They fired the folks, they put in the AI system, and then they have to shut down the AI system, and now they don't have the folks. So the reason I'm bringing this up is that the hype and the belief in the capabilities of AI, regardless of if they are there or if they're there fully, right, can lead to decision-making that then in the long run harms us, because you need to have seeds to replenish the next generation. You don't get the next experts without having the apprentice phase. And so that would be the warning I would have for all businesses, right, in terms of thinking through how do we create not just for tomorrow, right, but for the next decade.
Hey, everybody, thanks so much for listening today. Please go to Apple Podcasts and give us a 5-star review. Heck, give us 2 5-star reviews. I love it. Or catch us on Stitcher, iHeart, TuneIn, or wherever you get that podcast thing on. You know how that goes. Peace out.
Is it just me, or have we all lost our minds? It's a question more and more people are asking themselves, afraid to admit they already know the answer. It's also a podcast, one about people coming together in a time of division and uncertainty to talk about culture and politics, compromise and connections. It's about challenging the norms we've come to accept as a society and working together to find common ground. Fierce and Unfiltered, host Jennifer Horn is a former Republican strategist and party leader turned independent sanity activist. One way or another, we've all lost our minds. Join Jennifer Horn in the search to find them again.